this is a message that's been long coming. And as mentioned last time, I didn't get past Solomon chapter 1, verse 3, because there was so much to talk about concerning the maidens. Now, if I had read through the entire Song of Songs, which is also called Song of Solomon, I would have realized there was even more that could be talked about concerning the maidens and parallels that we see in Scripture. We'll touch upon a little bit of that, but there's more that that can be added to that message concerning the 10 virgins, or 10 bridesmaids, as we understand. Now, the Song of Solomon, you know, Solomon had a number of songs, evidently, that he put together, and Proverbs. 1 Kings 4 and verse 32 tells us that he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Why we don't have more, I'm not sure, but this is a good one to go over because it describes the love that a man and a woman will have in marriage, and also it speaks of a greater love that we have between the Father and the Messiah and us, ultimately. And so, as Yahshua's desire was, and as he expressed in prayer to the Father, that he desired us to be one with them, we find in Solomon, the Song of Solomon, that there's a desire for the bride and the husband to be together, or the bridesmaid. And that's how this, or the bridegroom rather, this is how this is basically put together. It's the bride speaking, and it is the bridegroom speaking. Now, as we go through here, I'll mention each section, and it starts out with the bride. So, as we find this is the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's, he may have had some help with this Shulamite, and we'll talk more about her as we go through. But it starts out with the bride, the bridegroom, the bride. Sections, the bridegroom goes back. Interestingly enough, 7 times. So the number 7 is in this book. And I don't know if anyone's ever noticed that before or if that's ever been said, but it's the first time I've actually looked through and determined which areas the bride speaking and then the bridegroom. And so there's 7 sections in total. It goes back and forth, starts out with the bride, and ultimately, as we get to the end, it ends with the bride speaking. Kind of relates to real life, doesn't it? when the bride speaks, sometimes she has the last word. I just throw that out there. You know, those that have been married understand what I'm talking about. What's the saying? Happy wife, happy life. And there's some truth to that. But beyond that, let's just go ahead and start in Solomon, chapter 1 and verse 1. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. May he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Your oils have a pleasing fragrance. Your name is like purified oil. Therefore, the maidens love you. And this is what we talked about last time in the message. Now, verse 4, draw me after you and let us run together. The king has brought me into his chambers. We will rejoice in you and be glad. We will extol your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. I am black, but lovely. Now, this is the bride speaking, and this word black is in the sense of almost like burnt, being darkened from the work that's being done in the fields. Now, there is the Queen of Sheba that's mentioned in 1 Kings 10 and in 2 Chronicles 9. Let's go to 1 Kings 10. But this is not to be confused with this Queen of Sheba. In 1 Kings 10, in verse 1, it says, "Now, when the Queen of Sheba heard about the fame of Solomon concerning the name of Yahweh, she came to test him with difficult questions. And so she came to Jerusalem with a very large retinue, with camels, carrying spices, very much gold, precious stones. And these things she gave as a gift to Solomon." And it goes on, talking all the way down into through verse 13. Now, this is a reference, but there's also a reference to the Queen of Sheba in 2 Chronicles 9. And I'll just mention this because it's something that stands out. 2 Chronicles 9. And again, we have this account of Queen of Sheba visiting after hearing the fame of Solomon. It says in verse 1, "Now when the Queen of Sheba heard the fame of Solomon, she came to Jerusalem to test Solomon with difficult questions." Basically starts out like before. But what's different about this one is towards the end here in verse 12, it says, "King Solomon gave to the Queen of Sheba all her desire, which she requested, besides a return for what she had brought to the king." So there's something that was given back to her, and some say even more than what she had given. Because ultimately, silver was like pavement in Solomon's time. That's how rich the kingdom was at that time under Solomon's rule. But this word black here, it comes from Hebrews 78:38, and it's the same as what's found in chapter 5 and verse 11. Let's go to chapter 5 and verse 11 in the Song of Solomon. And it talks about the admiration of the bride to Solomon. And she's saying his hair is as black as a raven. And so his hair was dark, black. And but when we go back up to verse 10, it says, "My beloved is dazzling and ruddy." Now, ruddy is Hebrews 1:22, and it indicates white, bright, even more like a reddish. But it would, the individual, you know, as we're here in America, for example, we can blush and have that redness in our face. Different for other individuals among us even. So here we find that this is a minority statement, basically. "I am black but lovely," going back to Solomon chapter 1, verse 5. And she's addressing the daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. "Do not stare at me because I am swarthy, for the sun has burned me. My mother's sons were angry with me, and they made me caretaker of the vineyards, but I have not taken care of my own vineyard." So in other words, she was a worker. She's not a queen. And the Ethiopian tradition is that the Queen of Sheba was actually Makeda. And Makeda and Solomon, they've said in this tradition, had a child. And you know, so when we look at the Song of Solomon, we can think, well, because this person is black, or it says black here, that they're dark, that maybe this is the Queen of Sheba, but it's not the Queen of Sheba. It's another individual from a different area, which we'll touch base with. Well, in fact, let's go to Solomon chapter 2 and verse 1. It says, "I am the rose of Sharon." Now, this is current-day Lebanon, as we understand. So this bride is, giving, who she is. And she's a worker. She's out in the sun, and she's become very dark because of that. Let's go back to verse 7. "Tell me," in verse chapter 1, verse 7, "Tell me, O you whom my soul loves, where do you pasture your flock, and where do you make it lie down at noon? For why should I be like one who veils herself besides the flocks of your companions?" Now, the Solomon speaks here, the bridegroom. In verse 8, if you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women, and he says this again and again. Now, there's something to be said about positive affirmations for women. Women like to hear that they're pretty, that they're lovely, that they're cared for, and that they're appreciated. And we find that men also like to be admired, and there's these attributes that both men and women have. A book that we recommend and was given to me early on before I was married was His Needs, Her Needs, which is something that we also go over in the Prepare and Enrich when we're talking to a couple that's thinking about a marriage, or even those that have been married for some time and are just going through some counseling concerning things that they should be talking about. But let's go on here, verse 8, if you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women. And this, again, is mentioned in like verse 9 of chapter 5, O most beautiful among women. In chapter 6, in verse 1, O most beautiful among women. Verse 4 of 6, you are beautiful as Tirzah, my darling. And that's actually, yes, that's actually the bridegroom speaking, verse 4 there. And then chapter 7, verse 1, how beautiful are your feet in sandals. So even the feet are appreciated, and of course they wore long robes. Typically, today a lot more is exposed, but you have even in the 50s, and you know, little ankle shown, men, you know, notice the ankle and well, that's beautiful, you know. But now everything's shown, and that's sad. My wife and I were looking at a show concerning a cruise for Christians, and. You know, they're getting in bathing suits, they're walking, the women were walking, young women, but they're walking with shorts way up, and it just didn't seem appropriate for a so-called religious, you know, gathering. And so there's something to be said about conservative wear and, you know, keeping yourself chaste, and, you know, there's beauty in that. In fact, in chapter 7, and verse 6, it says, how beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all of your charms. This is what the New American Standard Bible says. King James says delight for charms, and the wording basically means attributes. So how beautiful, how delightful your inner beauty, in other words, my love, and all of your attributes. So there's an internal beauty that women have, as well as men, and that should be certainly more important for us than anything outward that can be shown. Would you like to come up and present the message? I'm just, you know. Okay. Well, that's good. As we move forward, no offense. I mean, I'm just saying. Verse 8. If you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women, go forth on the trail of the flock and pasture your young goats by the tents of the shepherds. To me, my darling, you are like my mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with strings of beads. So there's certain things that can be worn that do or ordain or ornament a person, and usually this is done during a wedding, and you'll find this certainly is the case in other cultures besides our own. Verse 11, we will make for you ornaments of gold and beads of silver. And while the king was at his table, my perfume gave its fragrance. My beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh which lies all night between my breast. So a scented necklace could also be some, you know, symbolic meaning there. But in verse 14, it says, my beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of En Gedi. En-Gedi is part of the territory given to the tribe of Judah. In Joshua chapter 15, verse 62, En-Gedi is mentioned there. Evidently a beautiful area, and with vineyards, it was well watered. Verse 15, how beautiful you are, my darling. How beautiful you are, your eyes are like doves. How handsome you are, my beloved, and how so pleasant. Indeed, our coach is luxuriant. The beams of our houses, our cedars, our rafters, cypresses. Now the bride in chapter 2 says, I am the rose of Sharon. Now Sharon is an area of Lebanon, as already mentioned. She says, the lily of the valleys. And like a lily among thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. Now, that's an interesting statement. You know, in verse 15, it says, catch the foxes for us. The little foxes are ruining the vineyards while our vineyards are in blossom. That's a negative connotation towards foxes. You know, Joshua called Herod a fox in Luke chapter 13. And so when we look at this like a lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. It's a negative connotation. I'm wondering why she would be saying that, but I'm thinking she didn't probably care for Solomon's other women on the side, because he had a lot of concubines and he married a lot of wives, which he was warned, as all kings were, not to do. They were warned not to do that because it would, you know, remove their heart from him. And that's what happened, because he loved many wives and his heart was removed from Yahweh. Verse 3, like an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. In his shade I took great delight and sat down, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. And he has brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Sustain me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples, because I am lovesick. So a serious crush, in other words. And you get this picture, verse 6, his left hand is under my head, his right hand embraces me. So that's a very picturesque, image of love, romantic image. Verse 7, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the fields, that you do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. Let's go down to verse 10. My beloved responded and said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along, for behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. I was just talking to someone about winter rains stopping in Israel, in the area of Jerusalem. When that happens, it becomes springtime. They call them the winter rains. So the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers have already appeared in the land. The time has arrived for pruning the vines. So this is early spring, March, April. And the voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land. The fig tree has ripened its figs. This is May, August, basically summertime. In fact, go over to Mark chapter 11, where we find Joshua cursing a fig tree. My wife and I were watching an account of Mark word for word, as it is in Scripture, but yet in a video form. And in Mark 11 and verse 12, it came to that point, and it says here, seeing at a distance a fig tree in leaf, he, speaking of Joshua, went to see if perhaps he would find anything on it. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. He said to it, may no one ever eat from your fruit again. And his disciples were listening. Now, it wasn't even the season for the figs. That was going to be happening in summer. So why would Joshua go out of his way to curse this fig tree to no longer produce any fruit? And that was a question, because it was pretty dramatic the way it was presented. But the answer isn't always found when the statement is stated. It's here we find later, going down to verse 20, they come back to this fig tree later. And being reminded, verse 19, when evening came, they would go out of the city, and they were passing by in the morning. They saw the fig tree withered from the roots up, the same fig tree. Being reminded, Peter said to him, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered." Here's the key to understanding why he cursed it. Yahshua answered, saying to them, "Have faith in Yahweh." Have faith in Elohim. "Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, 'Be taken up and cast in the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says is going to happen, it will be granted to him." Okay, this is basically repeated. "All things for which you pray and ask, believe that you have received them, and they will be granted." So this was an opportunity to teach. Yahshua knew it would be an opportunity to teach them this lesson. The lesson is trust in Yahweh, have faith in him, ask of him, and you'll receive from him. That's pretty significant. So, you know, we might think, well, that's unusual. And it is. But it was for the point of bringing up something later that is not so unusual, but is something of truth. Going back to Solomon, Song of Solomon, chapter 2 and verse 14. "Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock," well, actually, let's back up to the vines in blossom have given their fragrance. This would be May, June, early summer. "But arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along." Let's go down to this verse 15, "Catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyards." I imagine if the little foxes are running around the vineyards, they can cause some troubles. And that's evidently why Yahshua called Herod a fox. But it says, and this would be occurring while our vineyards are in blossom. So they're more sensitive at that time to have little foxes being running around. Verse 16, "My beloved is mine and I am his." And this is what we have on the image. "I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine." I think Deacon Lucas and Mary were sending messages back and forth together when Mary was in the Philippines. Messages like this. Maybe they were images as well. But that's taken from this section here. The bride speaks in chapter 1, verse 1 of chapter 3. "On my bed at night and at night after night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. I must arise now and go about the city, in the streets and in the squares. I must seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I did not find him." This is a process that, you know, we go through. I mean, and it talks about a time in which, you know, people will go coast to coast. They won't be able to find the truth. But we're able to find the truth. It's been revealed to us as we've searched and sought him. And so we're in a much better position than what is to come for others. But there are still things that will come. It'll all work out. Verse 3, "The watchmen who make the rounds in the city found me, and I said, 'Have you seen him whom my soul loves?' Scarcely had I left them. When I found him whom my soul loves, I held on to him, would not let him go." So that relates back to, like, even Jacob wrestling with the angel of Yahweh. Don't let him go until he blesses you. Don't let go of Yahweh until he blesses us with the kingdom, as Terrell was saying earlier. "Until I brought him to my mother's house and in the room where of her who conceived me." It talks about the wedding, Solomon's wedding day in verse 6 going on. Let's go down to verse 9. "King Solomon has made for himself a sedan chair from timber of Lebanon. He made its posts of silver, its back of gold. and its seat of purple fabric, with its interior lovingly fitted out by daughters of Jerusalem. These daughters of Jerusalem, I believe, is referring to the bridesmaids. And it's also referred to the bridesmaids in Psalm 45. Psalm 45, and starting in verse 10. Here it's the daughter. It's a singular daughter of Jerusalem. But it's Psalm 45 and verse 10, starting, says, "Listen, O daughter," and this actually might be the bride that's being spoken of here. Yeah, singular, so I'm sorry, the daughters of Jerusalem would be the bridesmaids. The singular is the bride, referred to here in Psalm 45, 10. Says, "Listen, O daughter, give attention, incline your ear, forget your people and your father's house. Then the king will desire your beauty. He is your master, bow down to him." Speaking of Joshua. "The daughter of Tyre will come with a gift, and rich among the people will seek your favor. The king's daughter," that is the bride, all of her glory within, "her clothing is interwoven with gold. She will be led by the king," Joshua, "in embroidered work. The virgins, her companions who follow her," that is the bride. And this gets into what we had talked about earlier. Let's go over to Song of Solomon and down to verse 13 of chapter 8. It says, "O you who sit in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice." In John 10 and verse 3, we understand that the sheep hear his voice. And there are those that are studying the word, are hearing and are learning. They don't necessarily have a full knowledge of the truth, but they are eventually going to be accepted as they come into the kingdom following the bride, who does understand and have the knowledge of the truth and is being led by the Messiah. I want to point that out. There's something else that we can also look at, but let's go to the bridegroom in chapter 4, the Song of Songs, Song of Solomon. "How beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves behind your veil. Your hair is like flocks of goats that have descended from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like the flock of newly shorn ewes, which have come up from their washing, all of which bear twins, and not one of them has lost her young. Your lips are like scarlet thread, and your mouth is lovely. Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate behind your veil." Verse 7, going down, "You are altogether beautiful." Going down to verse 9, "You have made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride." Verse 10, "How beautiful is your love, my sister and bride." Verse 12, "A garden locked is my sister, my bride." Chapter 5, verse 1, "I have come into my garden, my sister and my bride." There's something to be said about, you know, being a sister and a bride when we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, of course, talks about marriage in part. First Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 9, one of the things it tells us is not to be, marrying outside of the faith. 39. "A wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Master. So this is talking about those who are baptized in the faith. And we are looking at not being unequally yoked, which is found in 2 Corinthians 6. And verse 14. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 is a second witness. Do not be bound together with unbelievers. For what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? I was talking to my mother about the wedding that we're planning on having, that Deacon Lucas and Mary are planning on having. And we're looking at August, the third weekend of August, August 16th, and I'll be here. But we were talking, and my mother had actually had someone else in mind. We had dinner with a former worker here. He married a lady from Thailand, and she has a faith, Buddhism. And my mom said, oh, is Mary... she was confusing her with Mary. I said, no, Mary is in the faith. And that's a good thing. I said to my mom, that's a very good thing because there'll be less problems. And she agreed. She said there'll be less problems in the marriage when both are in agreement. And that's what Paul is trying to, you know, prevent any problems. And certainly when we look at these comments here, my sister, my bride, my sister, my, she is your sister, but she's also your bride to be. So it fits with what we're talking about here. Yes, and you were praying for a sister in the faith that would be suitable for marriage. And I prayed the same thing. I ask Yahweh not for my will to be done, but for his will, for him knowing me better than I know myself, and any potential spouse, you know, there are attributes that my wife has that I really appreciate and need in my life, and I have certain attributes that I trust she appreciates and needs in her life. Same with both of you have attributes that complement one another, that help support one another. And so while Mary, you are a helpmate to him, he is also going to be a help to you in various ways that you probably don't even realize at this point, but you will over years be able to recognize just how blessed you are, especially to be in the faith. That is the greatest blessing. Song of Solomon, chapter 5. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my mirth among with my balsam. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. Eat, friends, drink, and imbibe deeply, my old lovers. And I was asleep, but my heart was awake. O voice, my beloved was knocking, open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is drenched with dew, my locks with the damp of the night. And it goes on, so on, so forth. Let's go down to verse 10 of chapter 5. My beloved is dazzling and ruddy, which we talked about, being bright, reddish, a contrast to that which is black. In this case, his hair was black. But going down to even, it talks about his abdomen in, and this is the bride speaking, but his abdomen is carved ivory, so evidently had a six-pack. Typically white, but you know, not always. In fact, in chapter 7, verse 4, there's ivory that's spoken of about her neck, for example. But she was, of course, darker in complexion. Chapter 6, the bride speaks, where has your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you. My beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of balsam, to pasture his flock in the gardens and gather lilies. I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine. He who pastures his flock among the lilies. Let's go down to verse 8 of 6. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number. This is another area. If I had read through and remembered, saw this, I would have remembered to have included this. But last time we looked at Revelation chapter 7, and I was making the connection, and I think rightfully so, because this tends to back it up, that those coming into the kingdom after the 144,000, or with the 144,000, are not the bride, but are indeed the bridesmaids, and have committed themselves to being a part of the kingdom. Now, how all this is going to play out, we have some ideas. Not sure how it will all, well, we know in the end it'll all turn out well. But in Revelation 7 and verse 9, notice this, and it says, "And these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude which no one could count." These are the ones coming into the kingdom, but they're coming in as a physical beings. And that's interesting, because here it says the maidens are without number in verse 8 of Solomon, Song of Solomon chapter 6 in verse 8. So there's a connection, and I wish I'd had that included in the previous message. But, you know, we can add and, you know, have a better understanding. But the thing about this is these maidens, they weren't led by the Messiah previously, and we had mentioned that, nor had they had living waters. They had just committed themselves, understanding the Father, the Messiah. They didn't understand completely everything, otherwise they would have been made first fruits, being given the opportunity to understand all of it, including how important the name is. And people today don't seem to understand the salvational aspect of that, even when you point out Acts 4:12, saying there's only one name given among men in which you can be saved, and they're saying, well, we can call them anything we want. We don't have to call, you know. Someone wrote just yesterday saying, I don't care what his name is, as long as I'm calling upon him. But yet the scripture says it's very clear that his name is very important. This is some of the blindness that we see on people who are evidently sincere, trying to do the best that they can with what they know, but they're refusing still to understand, or they're just not being shown enough, given enough understanding. I'm not sure where the block is coming from, but it could just be the fact that Yahweh's not calling them now, but they're going to be granted access to the kingdom. So the idea of all these, the multitude which no one could count, we have to think about, well, what about the five who didn't have enough oil and were shut out of the kingdom? Well, they're not the ones being talked about here at the close of Revelation 7. These are the ones that did have enough oil, enough sense about them and what they're doing to have come this far and then to be granted access. So just of interest, because there's some additional information here that wasn't in the other message. So going back to Song of Solomon in chapter 6 and verse 9, we see an allusion to the Messiah as the perfect one, who is unique. My dove, my perfect one, is unique. She is your mother's only daughter. Now, Scripture talks about the Father being the Father of all of us, Yahweh being the Father of all of us through genealogy. But also the fact that the heavenly Jerusalem is our mother. So she is her mother's only daughter. It's interesting to think about that, but I think we can underline that in red, indicating that's the Messiah. She is the pure child of the one who bore her, the one who would be, in reference to the Father, her would be, of course, Messiah. Just allusions, I think the wording is fit for it. It says, the maidens saw her and called her blessed. This would be, of course, in the kingdom. Verse 10 goes down. It says, pure as the sun. And, of course, the Messiah was given in vision, which those close to him, John and others, they saw that his clothing was white, better than bleached white. It was brighter than that. So pure as the sun would be that type of whiteness and brightness. Let's go down to chapter 7. We're still talking about the bridegroom here, as we were up here from chapter 6 and verse 4 on. Is the bridegroom talking. But the bride, 6, 1 through 3. Let's go down to chapter 7. How beautiful you are, the bridegroom speaking. How beautiful your feet and sandals, O prince's daughter. The curves of your hips are like jewels. So even with a dress, you can see their woman's hips. I mean, this is all, you know. That's where wearing overly tight, you know, clothing, even if it's a dress for women, is probably not all that appropriate. It's just some common sense things here when we try on clothes and the fit and all that comes into play. We don't necessarily have a clothing, you know, code here necessarily, but I mean, if you come in with shorts and a t-shirt, we're going to ask you to not do that anymore because it wouldn't necessarily be appropriate. And we would ask that you dress somewhat conservatively. Song of Solomon, chapter 7. Let's go down to verse 6. How beautiful and how delightful you are. Again, the inner beauty, my love, with all of your attributes, the delights, the whole person. Verse 9, it says, and your mouth like the best wine. And then it cuts to the bride again speaking. And the bride speaks through the rest of the book here. Goes down smoothly for my beloved, flowing gently through the lips of those who fall asleep. I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let us go out into the country. Let us spend the night in the villages. This is after the wedding, mind you, which you know, occurred earlier as this is broken down. Solomon's wedding day, going back to chapter 3 and verse 6. So some things are just not appropriate until marriage occurs, and then you know, you are considered one, one flesh. I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let's go into the country. Let's spend the night in the villages. Let's have our honeymoon, so to speak. Chapter 8. Oh, that you were like a brother to me who nursed at my mother's breast. If I found you outdoors, I would kiss you. No one would despise me either. I would lead you and bring you into the house of my mother, who used to instruct me. I would give you spice, a wine and drink from the juice of my pomegranates. Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. Again, that picture of romance. And more here is being spoken of in a intimate setting. But as a married couple. In verse 4, I want you to swear, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. Who is this coming from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? Beneath the apple tree I awakened you, and there your mother was in labor with you. There she was in labor and gave you birth. Put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Jealousy is as severe as Sheol. Its flashings are flashes of fire, the very flame of Yahweh. Now, here's some things that are being spoken of here that are intense and strong and powerful. And this is where Yahweh's name comes in to play here as well. And it's not listed in the rest of this, as I was, at least I missed it if it is. I didn't see Yahweh's name other than at this point. Verse 7, many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly despised. We have a little sister. She has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she is spoken for? If she is a wall, we will build on her a battlement of silver. If she is a door, we will barricade her with planks of cedar. We're going to protect our little sister. She's saying, as a bride, I was a wall, and my breasts were like towers. Then I became, in his eyes, as one who finds peace. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to caretakers. Each one was to bring 1,000 shekels of silver for its fruit. My very own vineyard is at my disposal. 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, and 200 are for those who take care of its fruit. O you who sit in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. Hurry, my beloved, and let, like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. A lot of flowery language in this, a lot of intimacy that's spoken of, and it comes into play more so when after they're married, but there's a little bit beforehand. Which even, you know, in verse 2 it says, may he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. You know, these things, you know, are some of the intimate areas of Scripture that speak about the human, relationship between a man and a woman and the love that can be had, and certainly a strong love that is to be in Messiah, and one that represents and reflects the mystery of the Messiah and the assembly, essentially, being that we are the bride and looking forward to the husband to come and to have that relationship with him more intimately, to be at the wedding feast, to partake of the spirit realm and all that there is involved in that. And so, you know, we don't fully comprehend, as Paul said, you know, we look through we look into a mirror darkly. He's describing how we'll look at that time. But we know that when the Messiah comes, as he is, we'll know how we will be, because we'll be like him. And so, you know, Yahweh is building a family. And so the relationship between a man and a woman is related even to the heavenly and our relationship to the Master, and even those coming in not fully in the Messiah will have an opportunity to be led by him and to be given living waters. But at this opportunity, at this time, it's our opportunity to be led by the Messiah, to be given living waters, and to understand how this can apply to us, but also apply to the future for the kingdom to come and the relationship at that time. We remember that in Revelation, it talks about the bride preparing herself. And this means that we need to express the fruits of the Spirit, that it's a love for one another that we are to have. And that's a reflection of the love that the Father has to us through the Messiah, who he gave as propitiation for our sins and a sacrifice that we might have no more death penalty hanging over our heads. And in talking to people in the world, they're not where we're at in our understanding. They have a blindness, quite frankly, that is abrasive and destructive to them and to those around them in many cases. And I say that because I was, promoting the recent magazine online, and the abrasiveness and the things that were said, both on Messenger and through email, and privately through Messenger. I mean, it was, of course, the post is given to have discussion, but there's a private message that can be sent, and then there's also the emails that can be sent, which are private. And I had to block a couple because they just went off the deep end. Now, when we talk to people, we don't want to act like that. We want to express the love and the kindness and the mercy and compassion that the Messiah has shown us, that the Yahweh has. Within their own character, this is found. It's through their spirit that we have partaken of, and that we have within ourselves, that we can express this attitude towards others, but especially among ourselves. And so when we think about love, it's not always just about intimacy. It's about intimacy, but it's also about doing what's right for one another and serving the Father together in love and joy and happiness, being able to rejoice and to be thankful. Each day is an opportunity for us to do all these things until that day in which we will be with the Master forever and always. In Yahshua's name, hallelujah.